Hi, this is Jennifer Jones with podtech.net, and I'm here at the Dow Jones Healthcare Innovations 2006 conference on September 12th, speaking with Edgar Engelman, who's a managing partner at Vivo Ventures. And Dr. Engelman is a very, very accomplished person. His background is that he's been a professor of pathology and medicine in the School of Medicine at Stanford. And prior to these roles, I'll just quickly go through his background. He served on the board of directors at Gene Labs, and before that, he was on the board of directors at National Medical Audit. And then he is currently an attending physician in immunology and rheumatology at Stanford. So I just sat in on a panel that they were talking about stem cells and kind of investing in cancer and all of that, and I was very attracted to the discussion that they were having, and so I asked him to actually sit here and spend about 10 minutes with me and PodTech listeners just talking about his investments in the stem cell area or lack of investments thereof, given his interests. But let me first ask you, first thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Delighted.
Good. And ask you if you could just tell me first about Vivo Ventures and then where you are actually investing today, and then we'll get into the stem cell.
Sure. Vivo Ventures is a 10-year-old venture capital firm headquartered here in Palo Alto that invests solely in biomedical companies. In fact, we invest almost exclusively in companies in which there is a therapeutic product, either a device or a drug, for which there is some clinical data that we can evaluate. That would be the basis for our initial investment.
Okay, so now we did get into a discussion on stem cell investing before, and you're saying that currently you are not investing in stem cells. Can you explain that a bit?
We have not made an investment in a stem cell company, and the main reason is that the technology hasn't proven itself to our satisfaction. There are lots of interesting companies that are developing various types of stem cell products, and we're watching the progress with great interest. But for a fund like ours that, as I said before, invests mainly based on clinical data, we haven't yet seen enough compelling data to pull the trigger on an investment.
So what would kind of get you there? What would make you finally say, okay, it's the aha?
We would like to see evidence that the treatment is effective for the indicated illness, as well as safe. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to see full-on phase two data as defined by the FDA, but we have to see enough data that convinces us that the product works. We have made investments on the basis of data in as few as 15 or 20 patients. And there's a lot of interesting trend data that we've seen, but we haven't seen data yet that completely convinces us that what's currently out there is effective.
So what does the venture business feel as a whole about the whole stem cell issue? I realize it's hard to make you speak for the business, but I am sort of putting you on the spot here. But I was curious about your response to that.
Well, I think, you know, first I would say the venture business is pretty heterogeneous. So there are venture firms that are perfectly willing to invest in earlier stage companies, and God bless them, because we need those firms. Ours hasn't been, at least not for the last 5 or 6 years. And I think that, you know, those firms that are investing are seeing the promise. There's some very exciting animal model data that suggests that this approach could work for some indications. There is an example of stem cell therapy that has been working for years, and that's in the area of bone marrow transplantation or hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, which works very well to reconstitute the immune system in patients who need that procedure, and it's very effective. What we're talking about, and I think the current era of stem cell discussion, is around the idea of reconstituting organs, specific organs, whether it's heart or pancreas for treatment. In the case of pancreas, it's islet cells for the treatment of diabetes, and so forth. And it's in those arenas where we haven't yet seen enough data to convince us that that an investment is likely to be successful, likely enough, because we are highly risk averse.
I see. Very interesting. So what kind of deals are you interested in at this point?
Well, we invest in companies, often startup companies, which I know might sound like it's a contradiction in terms, but we often are able to find entrepreneurs, or they find us, and these entrepreneurs have been able to acquire the rights to interesting drugs or medical devices that have already undergone some significant development, particularly on the drug side, and yet have not yet been approved. So, for example, we invested in a company called Prestwick Pharmaceuticals, which is located in Washington, D.C., and the founder there had managed to acquire licenses or options to very important and promising drugs for the treatment of central nervous system disorders. And in some cases, the lead product had already been developed in Europe and was approved in Europe, but had never been developed in the U.S. It had simply slipped through the cracks. So that was the kind of opportunity that we thought was compelling, and we made a substantial investment in that. And there are many other examples of such companies. Recently, we made an investment in a company called Capnia, which has a novel treatment for migraine headache, as well as a treatment for allergic rhinitis. That is a local therapy in both cases that is administered intranasally. And we saw no more than 20 patients worth of data, but it was controlled data with a placebo group and an active treated group, and we were convinced that the treatment was working and safe.
Is that pretty common for a venture firm to actually invest in only seeing 20 people, essentially?
I don't know. As I said, I think all venture firms are different. For us, it was, what led us and convinced us to make the investment in Capnia was that the product was incredibly safe. And in addition, the cost and time it takes to develop products for the treatment of migraine headache is relatively short compared to, for example, the cost of developing treatments for cancer or chronic rheumatoid arthritis. These are long, very expensive undertakings. And so for us, these opportunities were compelling not only because of the clinical data, but because of the pathway through the FDA, which in theory should be relatively quicker than for some of those other products.
So how do you find entrepreneurs to actually fund?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think we've been out there a decade now, and we probably established somewhat of a reputation for being entrepreneur friendly. So we look for them and they look for us. We do get more than 1,000 business proposals a year to review, and because we are quite focused in terms of what we're looking for, as I indicated to you, we really are looking for clinical data, it allows us to filter a great many opportunities relatively quickly. And our group consists mainly of MDs or MD-PhDs that have strength both on the clinical side in terms of ability to evaluate clinical data, but also on the preclinical side in order to be able to evaluate mechanism of action. And so by knowing what we're kind of looking for, I think it helps us. But then again, I think we have established a reputation of that is entrepreneur friendly.
So how many deals do you do a year on average?
We do about five or six a year. Currently, we're investing from our fifth fund, Vivo Ventures 5, and we've done today, I think we closed that fund about a year and a half ago, and we've probably done 7 or 8 deals already.
So what the average amount of investment per deal then is?
Well, we try to put to work between $5 and $15 million to work in any given company over time. And there are some that are smaller and some that are larger. But our fund size, we have about 100, the current fund is $180 million, and it's all devoted to biomedical. And so we would invest over the life of the fund in probably 15, 16, 17 type of companies.
So my final question would be, do you get a lot of deals from Stanford, a lot of entrepreneurs out of Stanford, just given your relationship?
My affiliation?
Yes.
Yes and no. Because the fund invests in what some people would say is a later stage, even though it may be the A round, the first round of funding, we don't see that many mature products coming out of universities. Having said that, we have funded companies out of Stanford and out of UCSF and other local universities, but I wouldn't say that's our most substantial source of ideas. Now, I myself, in my own research group at Stanford, we do relatively early stage research that's funded largely by government grants, and the companies that I personally started, most of which preceded the venture firm, were based on early stage discoveries. So it's a little bit frustrating that we can't do that anymore because of the risk profile. But you know, the company I mentioned in my presentation, I was a scientific founder of Dendrion. That company was founded 14 years ago, based on technology that came out of my lab at Stanford. And here we are 14 years later, and that company is just finishing phase 3 trials,
wow,
which we hope are successful. But that gives you some idea of how long it will take to hopefully get a product through FDA when you're starting from scratch with a new concept. And that long period of time and the amount of money it takes is what has many venture capitalists sort of a little frightened of that kind of commitment. That doesn't mean that early stage opportunities cannot get funded, and there are some that do. But it is a significant challenge, and you have to be pretty patient.
So what's your most successful investment to date?
Well, out of the fund, I'd say our two most successful investments. One was in a company today called Abraxane Pharmaceuticals, which was once called American Pharmaceutical Partners. And our fund was the only venture investor when that company was started. And it's now a public company that's worth between $4 and $5 billion. And that was, and that is a company that whose initial products were in the generic drug space, which is a different type of risk profile than an NCE. They subsequently developed a new formulation of a cancer drug, and they were selling that drug. It's a new formulation of Taxol or Taxotere, and it was a very successful company. And as I said, we were the only venture firm. It wasn't necessarily exciting technology when we made the investment, but it was a very good business model, and the company is very profitable. The other company that we were involved in starting, it was a company called Intermune, which is also now a public company, and we were part of the first, among the first investors into that company, which acquired the rights to interferon gamma, which is also known as Actimmune, and from Genentech. And it was already approved when the company acquired the product. So even though they were developing the drug for new indications, and there was significant risk in that approach, and still is, it turned out to be a very good investment because the company was able to raise substantial sums of money, go public on the basis of initial studies with an approved product. And so for us, it was a home run.
Impressive. Very impressive. So I've been speaking to Edgar Engelman at Vivo Ventures. He's a managing partner there. And may I give anybody your email or at least your website of your firm?
Yeah, the website is vivoventures.com.
V-I-V-O.
V-I-V-O,
okay.
In Vivo.
Right.
We used to be called BioAsia Investments, by the way. We renamed or rebranded about 2.5
yeah,
years ago.
I like that name better. Vivo.
It more accurately reflects what we do and what we invest in.
Right.
And so we welcome entrepreneurs and ideas sent our way. So hopefully this will result in some great ideas.
This has been Jennifer Jones at podtech.net, and thank you very much for listening.